the essence of life is learning and growing to the max that you possibly can and helping others on that path.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Matt Wise, the head women's basketball coach at Samford University. Coach Wise brings a wide range of experience from across the collegiate landscape. He started his career as a graduate assistant at the University of Florida before moving on to roles at Wyoming and East Tennessee State, where he served as an assistant coach. He also spent time at Little Rock and later joined the University of Alabama as the director of video and creative content. Known for his energy, creativity, and relationship building, Coach Wise has built a reputation as a coach who connects deeply with his players. His journey through multiple programs has shaped his philosophy and prepared him for the head coaching opportunity today. On this episode, we talk about his biggest adjustment stepping into a new head coaching position after a longtime assistant, talking about his offensive and defensive makeup for next season, as well as his definition of toughness. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Matt Wise.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help. Trade in your machine, any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. You get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish, but be sure to hurry because this offer only lasts this month of June only.
What's up, everybody? Thanks, coaches, and everybody for tuning in. Welcome back to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan and Doug here to converse, go over. We got a couple great things in stock, but before we get into that, I first want to make sure to mention the Rising Coaches Conference, partnering with U.S. Nike Basketball and Snow Valley Basketball Camps, happening in Westmont College, Santa Barbara, California, July 22nd. If you haven't signed up yet, make sure to sign up. Coach Don Showalter, Coach Mike Procopio, all going to be there so far. Head to the social media page at risingcoaches.com to lock in your spot. On top of that, the reason why you are here right now is to listen to the current head women's coach at Samford University, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Matt Wise. Coach Wise, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, likewise, man. Appreciate you.
So, newly appointed head coach, first off, congratulations. And it's obviously great to see, be able to get an opportunity to chat with you, learn what's going on. Especially, I can tell you now, personally, the number one question I hear from a lot of people is just, when I become a head coach, what are some of the main things, like when I first start, and just a lot of questions like that that our listeners ask. So I think you're going to probably have some great answers for those as you're going through them right now. But I want to rewind the clock a little bit. Initially, what drew you to coaching, and what was the moment that you knew this is the avenue you want to go, this was your calling?
So that's both a fun and easy question for me to answer, because I was raised by two coaches. So my mom was the head volleyball coach at Florida for 34 years, just retired, super successful. I will totally butcher her stats, but I still love bragging on her regardless. So 27 SEC championships, 8 Final Fours, I mean, over 900 career winning percentage, like insane. And then my dad was a college basketball coach under Lee Rose at Purdue, Charlotte, South Florida, and ended up, when my mom got the Florida job, he went into broadcasting. So now he calls college games on ESPN for the men's side. So when you say rewind the clock, like we would go back to
childbirth. That's right.
It's a DNA thing. I remember I had a middle school teacher, like a business class, and we had to talk about what career path we wanted to do or what we wanted to do when we grew up. And I put basketball coach. And she said, no, you got to choose something more realistic. I was like, that's what it's going to be. Like, what do you mean something more realistic?
Send her this podcast when we're done, when it comes out, when it drops, you got something to send to that person.
Yeah. This was going to be what I wanted all along. I didn't really care where or with who or whom, however you say it, I was coaching. I didn't care men or women, high school, college, pros. I remember graduating. I played D3 and I was trying to find my first job, and I was putting out feelers to anybody and everybody in any industry. Like, I just knew I wanted to coach and I love basketball. Yep. And so it just happened that my first job was a GA for Billy Donovan at Florida. Like, that's just what it ended up being. So I ended up in men's college basketball for the first 10 years. And so that's what put me on this path. And then luckily made the switch to women, and everything's going incredibly fortunately and blessed for us.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. When you got to that intersection, men's side, women's side, mm-hmm. I know, and I had the opportunity to coach at Texas with the women for a year. And so it was one of the best experiences for me, because it made me a better teacher, because women can't rely on athleticism to save the day. But when it came to that point, you're going to decide men's side, women's side, like, did you really pour over that? Or was it like, oh, you know what? No big deal. Because sometimes guys feel on the men's side, if you go to the women's side, then, you know, you can't go back and all those things that I don't think make any sense, but that's out there. So when it came to that choice, like, how did you decide that was best to do?
So I had been on back-to-back staffs on the men's side that had gotten let go, Wyoming and then ETSU. And this was the ETSU year was the COVID season. So like everybody, not just in coaching, everybody in the world, we were all doing a mental reset and an emotional reset on what am I looking for? What do I want? What do I value? Because before that, it was just, well, what's the next one? What's the next one? I'm still ambitious, but it was ambition over everything.
Right.
And so in that reset, what I did was I talked to a lot of people in and around coaching in different industries. So I talked to men's coaches, women's coaches. I talked to softball coaches. I talked to sports psychologists that I know and have relationships with, all these different people. And what was crazy was the consistency of people saying to me, why the heck are you still in the men's game and why are you not in the women's game? Because of my personality, the way I'm wired. To your point on the teaching, I love teaching. I'm obsessed with teaching. If high school or middle school teaching paid well enough, I'd do it. Like, right. I love it. And I am extremely relationship driven. I know a lot of people in coaching talk about that, and that is true for a lot. That's a commonality amongst coaches, but I am hardwired to care about each relationship and circle back with people, make sure they're okay, even if you hold them to the standard. Like, you don't lessen the standard to make sure they're okay. You hold it to the standard, but then come back, put your arm around them. And to be truthful, that's how I coached on the men's side. And it was really successful, at least in my interpretation of it. Like, on the men's side, I was super successful with my relationships, had players trust, that kind of stuff. But what people were telling me is that will be so good on the women's side. It's working on the men's side. It is a perfect fit on the women's side. And yeah, I talked to Tim Walton, the Florida softball coach. I talked to Joe Ligursky, the former super successful Wyoming women's basketball coach. Like, these people that like really gave me insights on, okay, what's the difference between men and women? Where do you fit? And then at the same time, I was literally raised around 18 to 22 year old women. Like, my babysitters were 18 to 22 year old female college athletes. Like,
right.
My afternoons going to practice amongst 18 to 22 year old female. So this wasn't foreign territory.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No, that's interesting. No, it's funny. I grew up with three sisters. And so when I first got to Texas, I was like, all right. Maybe this is gonna apply a little bit, but no, but that was the biggest thing that the women's side taught me, is to be a better teacher, because the attention to detail, and women are really hard on themselves. They can be. They'll hold on to maybe a mistake a little bit longer. Guys can maybe turn the page a little bit, but just teaching them, I'd show film, and I never said the word bad. I'd say, this is a great clip. This is a teaching point. Because I remember the first time I did it, I said bad, and I just got this, you could just feel this, kind of this, the shoulder slumped a little bit. And so just things like that, just being able to communicate. You're still saying the same things, but you're just saying it in a slightly different way, and you're just delivering the message a little different way. But yeah, no, that's great that you shared that.
I like how you said you were learning from other people in other industries too. So like, we had Ryan Pannone on here, who I'm not sure if you had any crossover with him in Alabama. I know that's been a little bit since you've been there. I forget how, but Pannone mentioned to us that he would go and he would ask, it was, I believe, Al, correct me if I'm wrong, was it at the Alabama softball coach that he was
speaking? Patrick Murphy. Yeah.
Yep. And then he was telling us exactly that. He would bring him in and, like, through that, and then also just you mentioning it, I just reiterate, like, you can learn so much from other coaches, but not even just other coaches in other sports, but just other people in other industries, like top business professionals, people in the sales industry about recruiting. Like, you can learn and spin what you hear and take from other businesses. And so that's why I feel like being a sponge to it all is just so meaningful, because you could take so much information from other industries, from other books, from other stuff you hear, and then relay it in your own personal way to coaching.
Yeah. I talk a lot like in the philosophical clouds and can get really out there. But I do think that for me, the essence of life is learning and growing to the max that you possibly can and helping others on that path. To me, I think that is what we are called to do. I think that is what we are trying to make an impact on. How great can we become in our own capacity, and how great can you make others along the way? I would be driven to do that if I was running a food truck. Like, that is hardwired. And so I think in that aspect of growing yourself, I love podcasts, books, read all business stuff. Like, I love Jim Collins, Brené Brown, Simon Sinek. And like, these are people that like, I just think are brilliant and that apply to coaching. Like, most coaches could never imagine. The X's and O's is what, 2% of what we do?
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah, no doubt. We had a guest on for our members last night, and he shared a book. What was it, Doug? Unreasonable Hospitality?
Unreasonable
Hospitality. I think that was the name of it. But it was about the top restaurants in the world and how they separate themselves based on how people, it's a dining experience. You're not just going in to eat. You can eat anywhere, but you can't have a dining experience everywhere. And so that's what you're tugging at right there. It's not so much X and O's is one thing, but like, your kids have to enter the building and leave the building feeling some type of way every day. And I don't mean the some type of way upset, because that's a different, but you got to create,
we'll get that.
Your culture has got to create where they're feeling some type of way every day. And that's what the best at any profession do. It's not, they have their craft, but then they've mastered the art of how they make people feel.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's really good.
So talk to us a little bit about being an assistant for so long. I know in our intro, it talks about like the stops that you had made, but I'll mention real quick. As you said, Little Rock, Wyoming, East Tennessee State, Alabama, Florida, and then you get the opportunity to be over at Samford and take a head coaching position. So you've obviously been at high level spots, high level schools, high level positions. Being an assistant in all those roles and then taking over the head position. So what has been the biggest adjustment for you stepping into a head coaching role after the assistant? Like, we talk about it all the time, but I don't have the experience Al does. But just going from an assistant to being a head coach, going those 6 inches over is a big step. Talk to people about the adjustment that you're going through, at least starting that role.
So I think the biggest difference is I thought I worked really hard as an assistant. I'll rewind. I thought the same thing as a player. When I was a player, I thought I worked really hard. I put in the time. I grinded. I'm doing the extra individuals, the extra lifts, the practice. I'm getting there early for prehab and extra shooting. I'm staying after for extra. And like, I believed that I was a hard worker. And then I became a grad assistant, and I realized I worked 5 hours a day at basketball. It was literally nothing compared to what real work is. Okay, so similarly, going from assistant to head coach is, I would say the biggest difference would be like, my side passion hobby is cooking. I love food. I love cooking. And I cook dinner most every night at our house for our family. And I'm pretty good. You do it every night. You're going to get pretty good at it. And in the first 3 weeks on the job, I think we had takeout every single night because I couldn't get home in time to cook. You know what I mean? My wife and I are eating after the kids have already gone down. So I thought I worked hard. It's different hours because it just requires different focuses from different people, different angles. And we want to try to make something really special here. If you want to get what others don't have, you got to do what others aren't willing to do.
On the biggest adjustment, and I know you've been there, I guess it's been what, a couple of months now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, a little bit.
Have you found the biggest adjustment has been the range of people that you have to not just talk to or deal with? Sometimes if dealing with means you're just tolerating them, and you can't do that as a head coach. You've got to be first in all these exterior relationships. I used to feel like getting to practice was like vacation because you had so many other things, whether it's speaking. Yeah. And has that been like a big adjustment for you as well? Just knowing that there's more stakeholders involved that you've got to build relationships with.
Yeah, I think definitely the relationship piece, but it's also, and some of that is necessity, right? Whether we're talking like academics, compliance,
you know, right? Yeah, alumni,
like,
people, right?
All that stuff, like, you have to do. But on top of that, like I told you, I've wanted to do this since I was two. So I don't think of this as I've been in the industry for 15 years. I think of it as I've been in it for 35 years. And like I have had my eyes set on becoming this for 35 years. And so I have all these ideas. And I told the staff, even when it comes to the things we're going to run, I said, right now, our playbook is the Cheesecake Factory. And we got the Cheesecake Factory menu. And we got to get this thing down to a coffee shop menu because the amount of things. But it's the same sort of thing on like ideas about raising money, marketing, interactions with other athletic programs, interactions on campus. Like I've got all these ideas that I've wanted for so long and that at different schools, I've implemented this one here and I've tried that one there. Now I'm trying all of them at the same time. And so the balancing of all these ideas along with recruiting, along with relationship building on the team, along with all this stuff, and then the necessary relationships and dealings, get stuff done. Yeah, yeah. So that's where the time goes. And so almost every day I've looked at the clock at the end of the day and gone, whew, okay, guess I better head home.
35 minutes ago and now it's 9 o'clock or whatever. But yeah, no, the days definitely go faster for sure. But that's a good thing.
I can 100% back.
Time flies when you're having fun, like we said.
For sure.
You get all these ideas and you're like, oh, I would do this. I would do this. Now, I'm not going to relate to either of you by any means. I want to first make sure I preface this. I'm the interim head coach right now, okay? I've had a month and a half of just like the amount of flooded emails, little like logistical things that you have to do on the back end. And again, I'm not even necessarily going into this next season as the head coach. But it's just like getting all the logistical things. So again, I'm not trying to compare from what you're doing to what I'm doing, but I could just see at least portions of a couple of little things I got to do. I had to call my coach yesterday. I was like, what is this? Like some NCAA compliance thing that I have to fill. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? He's trying to walk me through it. There's so many little things that you don't realize you have to learn. And I'm like looking at this. I don't understand this. I have to talk to somebody about this. I couldn't even imagine being able to be in the role going through things. Now, obviously, you have other people around you to help you, but it's definitely a lot more than I would have anticipated in only one month of an interim.
For sure.
So what has been like for you? Okay. It was about April 23rd, I think, was when you officially were head coach.
I probably should know that date. I've been drinking through a fire hose and you can tell me February.
I wouldn't know the difference. I'm pretty sure. So I'm almost positive that's what I saw, at least when the article was posted about it. But for the time that you have been there, what have been some of the things that like first on your mind, like as soon as you step in that role, like this is what I want to tackle first?
So because of the way that the change happened with the head coach going on to another opportunity, which I was thrilled for. She's a really close friend, mentor. I was pumped for her. And then getting the job from within, the first priority by far was re-recruiting the roster. With where we are in the portal world, that is the only thing that was on my mind. We, at the time, we had I think 13 still on board, and we were able to keep 11 of the 13. And the other two, one went on to a Big East school and the other went on to a Big Ten school. So it's not like they were jumping ship. They were just, they knew they had other opportunities out there. And dealing with that with them was great. We had open lines of communication. I was helping them along the way, told them they were welcome to come back. I would make calls on their behalf, whatever they needed, because this scenario was nobody's fault. Not even the former head coach, like Carly Coons. Like, it wasn't her fault. Like, she had an opportunity to come calling that she never sought out. That was priority one. And then priority two was getting the staff. And so we got priority one and priority two pretty much done. I'm going to still try to add a player or two, but feel pretty good about it.
What, when you were putting your staff together, how did you envision that? What are the most important things you wanted? And I know everybody's got to fit and complement each other and things like that, but what are just some baseline things you were looking for staff-wise?
Really high intelligence, really high work ethic, and a willingness to learn, a willingness to try, a willingness to do, a willingness to execute. And to me, and loyal is part of that too, but if you have really intelligent, really hardworking, really willing, like, you're going to find a way. And so our staff that we have, it's a young staff. I'm young. The coaches are young. But it is a really intelligent staff. We're talking sports psychology in our individual workout meetings. I want to be able to, and I say this in our recruiting too, like to players, I want to be able to talk to you about the chemical makeup of your brain during a workout and you not look at me like I got six heads. Because if you can understand that stuff, then we're going to be able to really accomplish some really cool stuff and be able to get through some really hard stuff. And that's kind of part of, like,
and they'll learn how to get there. They'll learn how to get themselves through some really hard stuff.
Right. Well, I don't want to say just toughen up or play better. I want to be able to say, no, you were stressed. Your breathing became quick and tight. So you weren't getting enough oxygen to your brain. So your prefrontal cortex was depleted. And so you were making horrible decisions. Okay, now let's rewind that. How do we get to better decisions? How about you control your breathing when you have that turnover? How about you don't look at me scared? You look at your teammate and say something confident to her so that now you're giving yourself a little shot of dopamine, a little shot of serotonin. Now you're feeling, but like, these are the kind of conversations that these are different. They're not for everybody. And this spot's not for everybody. And that's okay. There are a lot of coaches who have done it the dead opposite with do it harder and have had a lot of success.
Step it up. That's the no problem. Classic. Exactly. Exactly.
Because you got to be who you are. Like, if I was, I do quote other coaches and other books and podcasts like crazy, and I will 1,000 times. Almost all my jokes are like early 2000s comedy movie quotes. I'm going to quote other people, but I am going to be true to who I am too.
So your makeup, let's talk about what we're going to be anticipating this upcoming season, offensively, defensive makeup. Like, what, obviously not knowing the roster, as you said, for the most part, which you got maybe adding another piece or two, but just from your identity, what you have gone through, at least in your career, coaches you have worked under, like, what is your identity? What do you feel like you're going to be bringing offensively, defensively for the next couple of years? Are you a fast-paced person, a slow-paced person, up in your face, full-court pressing, trapping? What is it looking like?
Okay, so I don't know how long we've been going, but I think we did pretty good before we made it to pace and culture, like, as the buzzwords, right? Like, we got in here pretty far before we got to those. Okay. Style of play, makeup. So we are a product of our life experiences. We're a product of the people that we surround ourselves with. So offensively, a large part of the vision is from the 2-year unbelievable education of working under Billy Donovan as a grad assistant. I didn't say a word for 2 years. I just watched and listened with Billy and Mark Dagnall with the Thunder on the staff, John Pelfrey on the staff, Rashawn Burnell, Matt McCall, like Norm Roberts. This was unbelievable. The basketball minds and the offensive makeup in that time was the ability to do multiple things, the ability to play fast with pace and score in transition, the ability to play freedom and unpredictable offense, whether that's a motion ball screen or that's a traditional off ball motion, but like something that is unpredictable, hard to scout, hard to prepare for, and the ability to run sets. Some simple, maybe a middle tunnel ball screen, something quick and simple. Some complicated with multiple movement, with shuffles and curls and staggers and all kinds of stuff. And I think that offensively, that is, I talked about the intelligence piece, right? That's part of it too, is I want to be able to play multiple ways offensively. And then defensively, having worked under Larry Scheid and then Allen Edwards at Wyoming and other coaches I've worked for too, but that was my buildup of a help the helper mentality, a force the baseline, step up, seal down, fly around, rotate type mentality. I do think that when people get middle, they're able to make a lot of really good decisions, especially in the women's game with the size and athleticism. I think that when you're forcing to the baseline, you're taking away a lot of vision. So that's part of the vision of it. I think that to me in basketball, defense is, it's a science. It's a biology, chemistry. If they X, we Y. Like every time, that's what we do. If they go here, we go there. And non-negotiable. And if you were either there, or you weren't there. You did your job or you didn't do your job, right? And
all film doesn't lie.
Do what?
I said film doesn't lie on that kind of stuff. That's right. That's I was in the right spot. Nope.
Yeah. Like Frank Martin calls his midline the dumb A line. Because if you weren't there, you're a dumb A. Because that's where you're supposed to be. It's not negotiable. Kelvin Sampson does like a stopwatch on how fast they get to their post feed blitz. You got there fast enough or you didn't. Okay. So that's deep. To me, offense is jazz music. You know how to play the instrument and you got to play the instrument really well. I don't know what the song's going to sound like tonight. And if you're trying to play that song we played last week, you're probably not going to sound like the rest of the band tonight.
Or the night before.
And so when you watch these NBA playoffs, it really is like a different offensive scheme almost every single night. And I think that like you got the jazz music and you've got the science of defense. But if you're watching our group play, what I hope you come away feeling is not, man, they run a lot of cool stuff on offense, which I think we will. But I hope they don't go, man, they're really in position defensively, which coaches will, but not a general fan. I hope that a general fan watches us and goes, man, that group is tough. Because if you can do those things, if you can be really intelligent offensively and defensively and your identity is tough, then, you know, I think that's a recipe for success.
I like what you said, too, in the beginning. One of the things you said was, at least when you were starting, you talked on being the GA with Billy Donovan. You mentioned like the hardest thing to do is, or you said you would sit in a room and not say a word as a GA. You would just listen. I feel like that is personally one of the hardest things to do is sitting there. And especially because as a young coach, you just feel like there's times when you're in a meeting, you feel like you have to put something in and have to have some form of input to show value to people. But I feel like that's the hardest thing to do is be able to sit back, listen. And for you to be able to do that, especially with the coaches that you have worked for, not even to mention Billy Donovan, that's, I'm sure you could have took away more than enough. So that's awesome. That'd be a great experience just to be able to be a fly on the wall for some of those meetings.
Yeah. One of the lessons I got from Mark Dagnall working there was as a young coach, once you prove your merit or you have cachet or a voice in the room, you give your opinions. But he said as a young coach to don't speak up unless you have the stats to back it up. I think we should do this because the numbers say blank.
Right.
Like he was like, have evidence. Basically.
Right. Or some film. Like, hey, yeah.
The one thing that I wanted to touch on too, is you like at least ending that there, you said that you want your teams to play tough. Is there something, I know we talked on this the other day too, but how do you personally feel you form the identity of a tough team? Because I feel like a lot of times there's different ways you can do it. It could be, and it sounds like a lot of yours is maybe the psychological side, be mentally tough. And then that kind of portrays out onto the court. But like another coach that we spoke to recently, they were talking about just being tough. And like Coach Morrell, actually, we were talking about it the other day. And he mentioned being tough, getting on the floor, little things like that. What is your definition of tough? Is it mentally tough, physically tough, being big and strong? What does that look like?
When you all watch, who are some of your favorite tough teams?
I'm a big up in your face type of person, full court press. So really any teams that go full court press, that's what I've been fed all around my whole life is high school, college, full court press up in your face. So Shaka Smart's teams are always like that. I think those are always ones that interest me to watch just because they're aggressive. They're up in your face. There's a lot of energy. They're getting on the loose balls. They got the energy for the rebounds, quick out. So I would say Shaka is definitely one of those people that I like to watch a lot.
Yeah, I think it shows itself in different ways for different teams. Like, yeah, that's an example that Doug mentioned. Wisconsin is one of the toughest programs, I'm talking on the men's side anyway, in the country, just because they have a sturdiness about them. Their multiple efforts is another form of being tough. They don't give things easy. You know, they're just very difficult to deal with defensively. So they have a foundationally that you can just tell that's something that's important to them. But I don't know if I've ever seen Wisconsin pick up full court. And that's not to say that picking up full court isn't tough, because that's another form of doing it. They're a half court pack line team, and they're still as tough as anybody. I think it shows itself in different ways, but I think resilience is a form of it. How fast can you get to the next play is a form of toughness. And can you give your best effort over and over again? And how long can you do that both individually and collectively? And how close to 40 minutes can you do that on every given night?
So I think the way that we're going to try to illustrate it is, and to give language to it, is, again, stealing from another mentor, Larry Scheid at Wyoming, our culture was called ADU, A-D-U, stood for aggressive, disciplined, unselfish. And I think that those three are really the essence of makeup of toughness. So if you think about Shaka and the pressing teams, aggressive, right? Discipline, they do it all the time. And unselfish, because the willingness to get out of your comfort zone for your teammates to do what it takes full court, right? Okay, you look at Wisconsin on the half court, aggressive, physical. You don't make a cut without feeling somebody hit you. Discipline, they're in the right gap every single time. Ball screen coverage every single time. And unselfish, the fly around, the rotate, the cover for each other.
Yeah, covering for each other, that's right. Yep.
Okay, so the same sort of thing on the mentality approach. One of the things we'll do to try to work on this, teach it, build it, is like, what about the mental toughness of being down? So what we'll do is send both teams to the locker room. We're coming out of halftime. Doug, your team's down 8 points. We're going to play the first 5 minutes of the third quarter. Okay.
Okay.
We're playing live. If you turn the ball over, you lose automatic. Automatic. If you get three stops in a row, you win automatic. Now, lots of people do the three stops in a row, but trying to get them to understand how to play super aggressive, be disciplined about it, and continue to be unselfish, because you don't need hero ball right now. You need each other, and you need to string together stuff, because you can't trade baskets, right? And turnovers are a death nail, because you need more shots than them to be able to fight back. So like getting them to understand the toughness of the process of what goes into winning, breaking it down like that. And then again, so that's aggressive. We're getting after it. We're live. Losers are running. And then we're coming back with film sessions in the coach's offices, or we're coming back in film session before practice the next day, or even at the end of practice. Let's talk through that. How'd you handle it? Where did you fall short? Did you fall short because you weren't aggressive enough? Did you fall short because you weren't disciplined? Did you fall short because you got to selfishness? What was the holdup of why we weren't tough enough to come back in that moment?
I love that. Definitely look forward to watching you guys.
I remember him saying that on the pod. Coach Shai was on last year, and I remember him saying that on the pod. Yeah.
So let me ask this. Off of that, do you guys, it sounds like you're going to watch a lot of film, at least maybe preseason of practice, I should clarify, watching a lot of film of practice. Do you do that regular season too, like practice film, or is it just game film? Do you do individual breakdowns for each person? Hey, give 10 clips for your point guard and say, hey, this is what we want to work on for the season, and yada, show same of your bigs. What does the film look like? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I'm trying to project this because haven't gone through it.
Completely.
For me, I think the use of film is huge, but I think that as coaches, we take for granted kids don't see it the way we do. So I think that if the film needs to be, I think a lot of coaches like provide film to their players. I think you need to watch it with a coach so you can help them with what to watch.
Yeah.
And then I got this from Alan Edwards at Wyoming, is I think their attention span stinks. The stats are like, it's 30 seconds or whatever it is, and they're on to the next scroll. It might be less. I think it's like 6 seconds. It's something insanely short.
Right? It's because of these. It's social media.
Scroll, no, it's a scroll attention span. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Completely. So you're talking more of the development side, but I will say this, like one thing we did with Alan Edwards was, and Shy and Billy too, but with Al especially, is the breakdown of scout subjects for film sessions. So instead of showing the entirety, we might just show personnel, might just show the starters, might just show the key two players, whatever it might be. Or like when we get to actions, we're going to show five. That's it. Because if their seventh, eighth, ninth plays are going to beat us, then we weren't very good in our disciplines and our habits anyways. And if they run something 40 times a game, but our disciplines and habits are a perfect matchup for it, we don't need to watch that. We need to prepare for the things that are going to go against our habits, that are going to go against the things that we work on every single day. So I think kind of tapping into that, and then on the development piece with film, is I don't think they can sit through a 2-hour rehash practice film session. I am with you, Alan. I do the positives, and the correctables are the way we label them on film sessions.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I honestly started doing that. Yeah. Good. Great clip. Teaching point.
Yeah. And even those sessions, try to keep it to here's three correctables from yesterday. Here's three positives from yesterday. Here we go. Out to the floor. I love using film on the floor. I'm a huge believer in, if you can bring them over to the screen and show one clip, hey, this is what we're about. We're about to work on our ball screen defense. This is what it cannot look like. This is what we want it to look like. Okay, here's the drill. Here's how we're laying it out. Here's the scenario. I think that helps with the teaching.
For sure.
If you're able to get the video in front of them, it helps.
Yeah, no, I see a lot of teams that do that. Quick water break or whatever it is, and then you bring them over right before you go to your next thing. And then again, it's 30 seconds or 45 seconds. It's one clip of, like you said, this isn't it. This is it. And this is why this is good. This is what we got to, this is how it should sound while we're doing it as well.
That's right.
But I always love what Pete Carroll said about what he wanted his coaches in the NFL to do with the players. And he always said, I want my guys, staff, to learn the learners. So it's not on the players to just adjust to us. We have to adjust to them. Some might be, I can say it to you, Matt, and looking at you, and they get it. Some might be written, they look it, they read it, they get it. Some might be physically have to go out on the court and walk through it, they get it. But he wanted every coach to learn the guys in the running back room, the DB room, the offensive line room. Learn your learners. Learn how your guys learn. Then that's going to make you a better coach, a better teacher, as opposed to just putting everybody under the same umbrella, because not everybody fits under the same umbrella when it comes to learning.
Yeah, I like that. And then on top of that, they don't care what you know till they know how much you care, right?
Exactly right. Mm. Yeah, and Lute Olson said, we had his grandson. That was his grandson, right? Matt Braze, Doug, it's with the Sixers?
Yep.
I think, yeah, so one of the Sixers assistants is Lute Olson's, rest his soul, grandson. And he said Lute Olson used to say all the time, you haven't taught until they've learned. He said it to his staff every single day. So don't assume just because you say it that they get it. Like when you see it, like doing is understanding. So when you actually see them do it, then you've actually taught.
Once the goal is not to teach, right? The goal is for them to understand.
There you go.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly right.
Going back to how you were talking about you enjoy being a teacher, say you're sitting in a history class and all of your students are failing the tests. I wonder why. They're not getting the material. Why aren't they getting the material? Because you're not making it engaging. You're not making it useful or meaningful to them in some way, shape, or form. A lot of times teachers would always say, oh, this kid doesn't get it. Now, don't get me wrong. There's definitely your dime a dozen out there that just doesn't pay attention in class and actually care about that stuff. But logistically overall, if a whole class is failing, Why is that? It's probably because you're not making it interesting enough for them to want to listen or to learn or finding a way to be able to get it to or relay the information to them.
Yeah. And with that, like, I'm a big believer of when you're putting together a drill or a segment of practice, is I hate doing anything because this is the way we've always done it. Tried and true is good, and there are things, there are elements that work. But to your point, what is going to get them to understand? So I always try to think of it with the end goal in mind. Okay, this is where we got to get them to. This is where we are. What does that gap look like? What is that process of making up that gap look like?
Yeah, no, for sure. It does. It's on us to adjust. Like, sometimes if it ain't broke, break it.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe in that too.
You know, so, yeah, love that.
Coach Wise, we appreciate you being on here. We always like to wrap it up with one question, and we'll jump into that. But really what that is, if we were to put you back in your first coaching position, knowing what you know now, you had to share a piece of advice with your younger self, young Coach Wise, what would that advice be that you'd give yourself?
I like that question. That's a good question. That's actually, my dad does that with head coaches a lot. So that's good. The two that pop into my mind. One, I was really good at giving myself this piece of advice and I listened to it. The other, I was not. The first is from Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. It's, he who does more than he is paid to do will soon be paid more than for the work that he does.
I like that.
And there,
I like that a lot.
If any young coaches are listening, they're, you're going to not get paid like for a long time. They're like, everybody sees the big paychecks at the end. It is a lot of grinding. But if you're willing to do more than you are paid to do, you eventually it'll come around. And I believe that with a lot of the tough jobs I had, and that never really bothered me. I knew there was a process to it. The second one that took me a long time was, when it's meant to be for you, it will be for you. I think in this business, I watch it with other coaches of, it doesn't happen fast enough and they fall out of the profession. And I get it. The financial piece is one thing. We all got to make enough money for whatever our circumstances are, our family, whatever. But as far as the ambition side, and as far as like where you're trying to get to, like, you're trying to get there this fast for who? Compared to what? Why? Trying to impress who? And so for me, that was a hard part of a lot of self-reflection on, not that I was constantly being like, I'm not living up to my parents or whatever, but there's something to, my mom was a head coach at Iowa State at 22.
That's crazy.
It's not happening fast enough. It's not happening fast. For what? It was a different time, different era. Or I'm watching some of my friends that I worked with hit bigger and better jobs. And these people are like going on to make all this money in these higher levels. Man, why isn't it happening for me? Who says it's not going to? Who says it's not going to get there? Doc Rivers' daughter played for my mom. And I met him one time, or a few times, but we talked one time about me getting into coaching. This is before I got my first start. And he said, my only piece of advice to you is, there is no blueprint. Whatever people tell you the path is, they don't know.
Run your own race.
Right. And when it's meant to be for you, it will be for you. You just got to do more than what is asked of you.
Well said, man.
Couldn't be any better. Yeah.
Put a ribbon on it right there. Love it.
Do what you got to do. Put the work in. Put your head down and don't worry about the financial side, because it'll come when you put the work in. That's nice nutshell. Perfect.
Now, I will say, but that stuff's not always easy, because you'll work, and then you'll hit a hard setback. Like, there's been nights where I've been on the computer on Indeed.com looking up things outside basketball. What am I going to do? This is not going to work.
Yep.
There's a low moment.
No doubt.
But it's like so I get the job as a staff. We go out for lunch, like a late lunch. It's like 3 o'clock because we were working on all the recruiting stuff. And we find out that the two best players or two leading scorers are going to go in the portal. And the staff is just down. They're just down. And I was like, you thought this was going to be easy?
Yeah.
You thought we were going to have success easy? Like,
Yeah, all 13 like, stay. Love you, coach. Let's do it.
No, fasten your belt, tighten your shoelaces. Let's get to work. Like, we got stuff to do. Yeah, there's been low moments, but when you just attack it, attack the moment.
And that's still a reflection on your program that two players played themselves. They played themselves out. God bless them. They earned the right to do that. Yeah.
Completely agreed. So
that means they left the program that was probably doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Or they were doing, at least they were doing well enough as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Love it. Great stuff.
We appreciate you for being on here. As we said, you right now just starting into a head coaching position. We'll have to check back in with you in about a year once the season's over, and we'll see if any of these answers change. But no, it's great to be able to get an opportunity. I know right now, at least from what Al tells me all the time, stepping into a head coaching role, there's more than enough things to tackle. So for you giving us the time, thank you very much. And we, at least selfishly, I could say, I look forward to watching the women's Samford team this year, because we're going to be up in the face, full court pressure, tough team, something to look forward to. You'll be hearing from me. I'll be like, all right, I see everybody getting a little chippy over there. Okay. No, but right.
First day putting in the Dougie press, called a full court press Dougie.
No, but there will be charges on the first day. I can tell you that.
No doubt.
Love it. Get on the floor. Put your body on the line.
That's right. And I'll be the first one out there taking one.
We look forward to seeing what you guys shape up for this next year. And again, like I said, thank you very much for being on here, sharing your story. And for everybody out there, again, another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan and Doug keeping you tuned in. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all in California. If not, we'll see you the next episode. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.